Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. My name is Andrew Rome, and I'm today's worship associate. I'm joined in welcoming you by Kathy Kearns, who is leading worship today. We are glad that each and every one of you is here. Lay-led services are a time-honored Unitarian Universalist tradition. We believe that the Sunday service is best reflected in a variety of voices and experiences. Lay-led services allow us to share our individual spiritual journeys, experiences, and diverse worldviews. It's an important part of our Unitarian Universalist heritage.
The chalice lighting today is a tenet of the Methodist faith, as stated by Hillary Clinton. Do all the good you can, for all the people you can, in all the ways you can, as long as ever you can. I was at an Amish farm a couple of years ago, illegally buying raw milk. Well, it wasn't quite illegal, although it is against the law in Ohio to sell raw milk. There's a neat workaround of legal trickery where I bought a share in the herd. So I was just dancing around the edges of the law, not actually breaking it. I guess I'm okay breaking the law. If there is something at stake I value more. And in this case, that's finding the highest quality food possible. Anyway, I was talking with the farmer, Arlie Stutzman, about current events, politics, whatever, and he said something that stuck with me. He said, "It takes all kinds to make a world." And this stuck with me partly because of who said it. The Amish choose to live the way they do, far outside the mainstream American culture, and far from being ignorant Luddites who reject all progress, the Amish evaluate technology and decide if it aligns with how they want to live, individually and in community. But what Arlie said stuck with me because despite his total commitment to to living out his values. He passed no judgment on people who make different choices. He saw diversity as necessary. It takes all kinds to make a world, and it takes all of us to make our church. Let us embrace our values and our diversity, and this morning join together in worship.
Once upon a time, there was a little pebble. You know, the little gray ones, the ones that sit in piles and look a lot like all of the other stones around them. They're gray, and they have several sides, and the sides are all a little bit different from one another, but they definitely are much alike as well. So each pebble is unique, and among these pebbles are quartz crystals. These beautiful stones are all a bit different, but the crystals are brilliant colors. Red, orange, yellow, green, purple, and some are bright white. All the colors of the rainbow. Now these crystals are considered the elders, and the pebbles are the youngers in the rock community. The pebbles went to church school to learn from the crystals all the mysteries of the world. And they learned about themselves and their own natures. They learned how to be in good relationship to each other and to their stone community. And they learned how to make a positive difference in the world. One pebble, though, was particularly curious about all these mysteries, as will happen in little pebble communities. And he asked his quartz teacher lots and lots and lots of questions. He wanted to know everything. Where do I come from? What is this world? Who am I? What does it all mean? And the pebble admired one of the crystals so much. She was beautiful and bright, and she seemed to shine from her, light seemed to shine from her and glance in all different directions, and the pebble wanted to be just like her. The crystal was good and a wise teacher, and she said to the pebble, "You are already shining with light, so beautiful and so bright. Just watch me, and I'll show you what I mean." The pebble looked at the wise crystal, and a beautiful red light shone. "In our rainbow principles," the teacher said, "red stands for respect, and we give to each person respect as an individual." And together, they all learned about the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Then the pebble noticed that a beautiful orange light glanced from across the room, and another teacher shone bright. Orange means we offer fair and kind treatment to all. And together they practiced justice, equity, and compassion in their relationships. When a sparkling yellow light glanced from another of the crystal's facets, the teacher explained, "Yellow means that we yearn. We yearn to learn and grow with each other in our church." So they learned and practiced acceptance of one another and encouraged one another's spiritual growth. "Now see this green light?" the crystal said. "The green light means that we grow by searching freely for what is true." And in their class, they searched for truth and meaning in a free and responsible way. "And what does the beautiful blue light mean?" asked the little pebble. "Blue means that we believe in our own conscience and practice democracy." And the crystal explained, "The purple is next. And what is this purple precious light? It signifies that we work for world peace and freedom for all." The pebble was very confident with all of this knowledge, and together the pebble and the crystal worked and played and practiced these wonderful principles. And then one day, the pebble noticed that the crystal shone with a pure white light. And the pebble got very excited. And he jumped up and down and he said, I know what that white light means. It means that we are all a part of an interdependent web of life." "That's wonderful," the crystal said to the little pebble. "You've really come a long way and have learned so much. I'm so proud of you." And the pebble said, "Does this mean I'm more like you now?" Does it mean that I can shine with light and all the colors of the rainbow? The crystal paused. It does, in fact, mean that. But do you see, you have always been shining with all of these beautiful lights? When we have been learning about the and practicing these wonderful principles, you have been learning about yourself. You see, my facets are simply mirrors. And when you have looked at my colors, you have seen yourself. All I have done is hold up a mirror to you.
Our wisdom words today are from Thich Nhat Hanh. The Buddha said that his Dharma body is more important than his physical body. He meant that we have to practice the Dharma in order to make Nirvana available here and now. The living Dharma is not a library of scriptures or tapes of inspiring lectures. The living Dharma is mindfulness manifested in the Buddha's daily life and in your daily life too. When I see you walking mindfully, I touch the peace, joy, and deep presence of your being. When you take good care of your brothers and sisters, I recognize the living Dharma in you. We will now enter into a period of silence. Feel free to make yourself comfortable and open to what you'll experience here today. I would like to offer a prayer today that is called Sacred in the Ordinary by the Reverend Tamara Labak. Holy One, we gather this day to be reminded of the sacred in the ordinary. The holy moments of waking yet again to a new day. The feel of the earth beneath our feet. The crisp cool on our skin, the joy of being welcomed by our fellow travelers, the warmth of this place. Help us this day to be fully present in our living, awake to each breath. Remind us, O God, that life is taking place in the in-between as well as in our lofty goals. Remind us, O God, that detours and the details craft the path and make it our own. Help us to remember that we did not make this day, but that we have the glorious pleasure to greet each moment as it unfolds, to reach out and kiss its cheek as though it were a visitor who had come a long way just to see us. These and the prayers of our hearts we now lift up in the silence. Amen.
I was listening to Pete Seeger sing this song last night, Old Devil Time, a recording, and on the last verse, the whole audience joined in singing. And I'm not sure if they had the words in front of them or they all just happened to know it, but it was quite nice. So the last verse goes like this. No storm. No storm nor no storm nor time fire. Sorry. No storm nor fire can ever beat us down. That's the first line. Try that. No storm nor fire can ever beat us down. And then it says, no wind that blows but carries us further on. No wind that blows.
time. Oh, devil fear. Oh, devil fear. You with your icy hands. Oh, devil fear. You'd like to freeze me cold when I'm afraid. My lovers gather round and help me rise to fight you. One more time. Oh, devil hate, I knew you long ago, before I learned the poison in your breath. Now when I hear your lies, my lovers gather round and help me rise. Fight you one more time. No storm nor fire can ever meet us down. No wind that blows but carries us further on. And you who fear, oh lovers, gather round. Sing it one more time. No storm nor fire can ever beat us down. No wind that blows but carries us further on. And you who fear, oh lovers, gather.
The following is an excerpt from Compassion, A Reflection on the Christian Life by Henry Nguyen, Donald McNeil, and Douglas Morrison, which explores the difficulty in confronting injustice in the world. Part of that confrontation is recognizing our own participation in the social problems we seek to address. It is not easy to confront compassionately. Self-righteousness always lurks around the corner, and violent anger is a real temptation. Probably the best criterion for determining whether our confrontation is compassionate rather than offensive, and our anger righteous rather than self-righteous, is to ask ourselves whether is to ask ourselves if we ourselves can be so confronted. Can we learn from indignation directed at us? When we can be confronted by a no from others, we will be more able to confront with a no. Saying no to evil and destruction in the awareness that they dwell in our own heart is a humble no. When we say no with humility, this no is also a call for our own conversion. No to racial injustice means a call to look our own bigotry straight in the eye. And no to world hunger calls us to recognize our own lack of poverty. No to war requires us to come to terms with our own violence and aggression, and no to oppression and torture forces us to deal directly with our own insensitivities. And so all our no's become challenges to purify our own hearts. In this sense, confrontation always includes self-confrontation.
for social justice is a key tenet of our faith. It is found in the Unitarian Universalist principles and in our hymns. We say we are a justice-seeking people, but what does this really require of us? And how can we move forward to make the world a more just place? The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. famously said, "The arc of the universe bends towards justice." How can we act in ways to create justice, especially in the context of all the rest of the demands of our lives? This service contemplates everyday ways we can help bend the universe toward justice. I feel I should begin this service with a caveat. If you came here today to hear me tell you an inspiring story of how I have managed to become a model justice seeker, you will be disappointed. There are other people in the congregation who are much more qualified to give that sermon. No, I decided to propose this service because I felt like it was something that I needed. We all know the problems in our society. Hunger, climate change, gun violence, a broken criminal justice system, unequal opportunity and unequal health care, just to name a few. I have had the sense for quite a while that our society is adrift. I have felt a growing discontent and unease, and perhaps some of you feel that way too. So like all of you, I have hopes for the world, things I want changed. But change is hard, and I often feel overwhelmed. Change takes courage. Change takes sustained energy and effort. Change takes hope and belief that a better world is possible. When we feel discouraged, change can seem even harder to achieve, and it can feel that the easiest path is really just to turn away from the problems that we see. I know I feel at times like the path forward toward a fairer and more just society looks too steep. This service is my attempt to suggest ideas of how we might be able to take some steps toward a more just society, starting, of course, from wherever we are now. Although individually they might seem like small steps, collectively they could be powerful. And my hope is that by focusing on the small ways we can individually try to create more justice, you will feel inspired and not overwhelmed. This service was inspired in part by a sermon I heard in this church many years ago by Saul Flanner titled "Copy Store Jesus." It's really one of the most memorable services that I've heard. And what Saul talked about was he explained how he worked in a copy store, and he decided that he was going to bring his values to bear every day at work. And so he talked about how he strove to manifest the values of Jesus in the way in which he treated his customers and his coworkers every day. So we can really take Saul's perspective to heart and look for ways to live out our values every day. The service also reflects lessons I've learned in my own work life. So by training, I'm a developmental psychologist interested in children's social and emotional development. I'm interested in studying things and understanding things like why some children form better relationships with peers, why some children are better at regulating their emotions or less prone to anxiety. Of course, these are big questions to try to tackle. Initially, the field tried to address these questions by looking for those one or two things, like the quality of a child's relationship with a parent, that might explain why some children do better than others. But, of course, it turns out that an important outcome, like trying to explain why a child is highly anxious, tends to be explained by many different things, many different factors operating together, all with a small impact. The same lesson has been learned in the study of genetics. Single genes rarely have large effects. Instead, many genes, each with small influence, can influence how we think, feel, and behave. Thus, it turns out the best way to move forward in understanding problems in the social sciences is to consider many possible influences, keep an open mind, and tenaciously study each of the possibilities, understanding that science is slow but progressive in building knowledge. To be a good scientist requires patience and hard work as well as creativity. It occurred to me that the approach I take in studying big science problems might provide me a way forward to overcoming my feelings of inadequacy and inertia when it comes to addressing large societal problems. When we talk about seeking justice, we're typically talking about working toward a large goal, such as reducing hunger or creating a fairer criminal justice system. So today I just want to talk about these small steps that collectively can help us move toward a large social justice goal. The first step, I think, is to acknowledge injustice, because that provides us the motivation to do something. Now, I know that sounds obvious, but maybe at times it's more challenging than it first sounds. When I was a teenager, I worked as a cashier at a store that was kind of like a Kmart. And one day, a woman came through my line with a child who looked around 6 years of age. The woman was verbally berating the child and made the child sit on the floor. I was horrified and I froze, unsure how to respond, and said nothing. What could I have said? I wasn't prepared and ready to speak up. So to be a justice seeker, we have to be willing to speak up. To be a justice seeker, we have to be willing to notice the problems and speak for the forgotten ones. I have increasingly felt drawn to confront the racial injustice I see in the criminal justice system. After one of the many recent incidents when an African-American male ended up killed by the police after being stopped for a minor traffic violation, I posted on Facebook about the multiple times I, as a white female, have been pulled over by the police for minor traffic violations and did not even receive a ticket. If we live in a place of privilege, it can be especially important to speak up and show compassion for those who lack our advantages. We can raise awareness and bring attention to injustices by looking for opportunities to be a witness in our daily lives. And we can lend support to others as they witness to the world. Once we acknowledge injustice in the world, we can at times feel overwhelmed. So the next step that can be helpful is to focus our energy and effort. A place to start might be to identify one injustice you feel called to address. Take some time to reflect. What moves you deeply? What do you feel passionate about? It will be much easier to devote yourself and do the hard work of justice seeking if you feel personally inspired. Sometimes I sense a bit of annoyance from people who are inspired around a cause and don't understand why I am not equally so. Could I come to the movie and the discussion about climate change? Not me, not today. Maybe that will be a long day at work. Maybe that's the day that I finally get a chance to start reading that book for the church's monthly book club. Let's invite others to join our cause, but be cautious about judging another if they do not seem to share our passion or commitment to a specific cause. Likely they are sympathetic, but it is the rare person who can marshal the time and energy to address every cause, and sometimes nourishing the spirit is what we need. Focusing on one or two passions can help us overcome the inertia we feel and the desire to simply disengage because we feel overwhelmed. A third step we can take is bringing an attitude of possibility and abundance. Our society seems to unwittingly encourage us to often do the opposite. When someone asks you at coffee hour, "How are you doing?" what do you say? The cultural script is to say, "I've been so busy." Yeah, all of you could fill that in for me, thank you. We focus on time poverty. But research in psychology has shown that our moods and how we feel can influence our attitudes and behaviors. And it's not just that feeling down makes us hopeless. But it turns out that experiences of positive affect and happiness also have their own beneficial effects. For example, positive moods are associated with people being more creative and more resourceful. Happier people also experience better physical health. Perhaps you have a social justice passion, but have told yourself you do not have the time or the resources to make a difference. If so, I encourage you to challenge this assumption. Stop saying you're busy and instead focus on what you can do and want to do with your available time, those things that bring you joy or the fulfillment that occurs when our values and our actions feel like they are in alignment. A fourth step that may help you take action toward justice is to focus on an attainable or intermediate goal. What could be the next step? For example, our church helps with preparing a hot lunch every few weeks, and we collect food items for the local pantry. Perhaps there's some other way we could augment community efforts to alleviate hunger in Portage County, such as holding cooking classes on how to do inexpensive but healthy meals. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. says, "Faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase." Focusing on the next step rather than the ultimate outcome may help propel us forward. Another step that can help us move toward justice is to celebrate successes, large and small. Several years ago, I was an untenured faculty member trying to work toward tenure. And a successful tenure decision requires the achievement of many large, long-term projects. And one of the best pieces of advice that I ever read as an untenured person was to celebrate the small successes along the way. Celebrate submitting the journal article or submitting the grant, not just when you get your article published or you get your grant funded, which of course may or may not happen. Celebrate the intermediate steps and that all contribute successively toward reaching your goal. We can also help support others by celebrating their successes as well. We have many justice seekers in our congregation, and we can make it a practice to lend support and encouragement to those who are actively and routinely seeking justice. Finally, a humble attitude, a willingness to continue in the face of failure, and an ability to accept our limitations are critical. Working toward change is hard work, in part because it is long-term and incremental. It requires persistence in the face of opposition and the ability to continue when our initial efforts fail. Thomas Edison said, "Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration." As with science, persistence is critical in social justice work. We may also need to be flexible and responsive to others' ideas. In the realm of science, people put ideas out there, and the scientific community responds with a critique. While I can confess I am not always happy to hear the critique of a fellow scientist, in the end, my ideas get better as I consider and respond to the opinions offered by others. We can learn from those who disagree with us. We can also benefit by realizing we cannot do the hard work of social justice alone. At those moments, we may take comfort in the support and shared values we have with kindred souls. As we begin a new year, I encourage you to ask questions about your own journey as a justice seeker. Where does your passion lie? What inspires you enough that you would like to lend your voice and actions to make a change? Even if time feels limited, what are some small steps that you could take that could help bring change on issues that are important to you? How could you harness your compassion to help others? How could you work with others or celebrate successes in ways that will help you stay motivated and focused on the work that you want to do? In closing, I leave you with the words of Thich Nhat Hanh, his reflections on how to manifest loving kindness in the world. Aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression, I vow to cultivate loving kindness and learn ways to work for the well-being of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I vow to practice generosity by sharing my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in real need. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. I will respect the property of others, but I will prevent others from profiting from human suffering or the suffering of other species on Earth.
Our church has been revising the annual budget process to ensure that all spending is guided by our mission to inspire love, to seek justice, and to grow in community. Our board, which I'm privileged to serve on, has selected three special focus areas for this year: economic justice, environmental justice, and outreach to the wider community. The ongoing work of church staff, members, and friends to make the world a better place is supported by our gifts, financial and otherwise. Let us take a moment now to consider how we support the work of our church. Your offerings will be gratefully received.
Our benediction is from the Reverend Jack Bryan. Go out into the world and greet with love and compassion every man, woman, and child you may meet. Return not evil for evil, but strengthen the faint-hearted, support the weak, and help the suffering. In all things, look beyond the letter to the Spirit, making your lives a living witness to your faith. And bring honor upon yourself and all creation by working for justice that the whole world may know peace.